AT&T. To place a calling card or credit card call, press 1. To place a collect call, press 2. For AT&T customer service, press 3. For 00 info, U.S. directory, press 4. For rates, terms, and conditions, or to place an operator-assisted call, press 0 now. Please dial the area code and 7-digit number that you are calling. Or please enter 01 and the international number that you are trying to reach now. Please enter your calling card number and PIN or major credit card number and the 4-digit expiration date now. Thank you for using AT&T. If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, stay on the line and a hacker will assist you shortly.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Hey.
Out there in Skype land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
You do. Good evening.
Well, you know, we also have an exciting announcement because next week, for the first time in a long time, we are going to be opening up the phone lines to listeners here on this very radio program. So mark your calendars. It'll be a special listener call-in edition of Off the Hook a week from today, from 7 to 8. And there will be no overtime next week as a result of that. So overtime follows this particular program on our YouTube channel, Channel 2600 at 8 o'clock. Where you can call in on the internet, but next week you'll be able to call in on the radio. So we have some interesting developments. You guys looking to the skies lately? There's this whole hullabaloo about unknown drones flying around, especially New Jersey, Staten Island, those kind of places. I didn't mean that in a derogatory way, but just, you know, those places. Yeah.
Big ones.
Big drones, yes.
Big drones.
Big drones that apparently nobody seems to know who they belong to. I want to read a story that came out by the Associated Press today entitled Homeland Security Shares New Details of Mysterious Drone Flights Over New Jersey, lawmaker says. The large mysterious drones reported flying over parts of New Jersey in recent weeks appear to avoid detection by traditional methods like helicopters and radio. That's according to a state lawmaker briefed Wednesday by the Department of Homeland Security. He had to be briefed to be told that they're evading detection. Okay, that's kind of why we're talking about it, because they evade detection.
Yeah, some of the reports have been that they disable their navigation lights when they're approached by other drones, that some municipalities do have the authority to use to investigate things and get aerial views. They've tried to do this, and then when approaching them, they've like gone dark.
They turn off their lights. That's sophisticated.
Yeah, but that's anecdotal. I'm not sure if I don't have a story.
I heard the same report. In fact, I even saw a video piece where I saw the light turn off. I was like, wow, what kind of mastermind could do this?
I think they're scanning things, but that's my opinion.
I think it's Google. All right, I'm going to say that right now. I think Google is doing some kind of mapping or God knows what. Because you mentioned, Kyle, when we were looking at this, it seemed very methodical.
Well, that was a lot of the case. And if you were going to do like a LiDAR terrain map or something, or like try to get accurate coordinates of certain spaces, you would do that. You would like do sort of like comb the area in like a methodic way to get a full larger picture to look at.
Well, in a post on the social media platform X, which we continue to call Twitter, Assemblywoman Dawn Fantasia, Fantasia? That can be a name? That's amazing. That was one of my favorite films growing up. Wow. What a great childhood they must have had. Dawn Fantasia. She described the drones as up to 6 feet in diameter, sometimes traveling with their lights switched off. The Morris County Republican, and that's pertinent for some reason, I guess we'll find out, was among several state and local lawmakers who met with police and Homeland Security officials to discuss the spate of sightings that range from the New York City area through New Jersey westward into parts of Pennsylvania now, including over Philadelphia. Now, the reason I think it's relevant, the fact they keep mentioning political parties, Republicans are trying to blame Democrats for this, too, somehow. In fact, the governor, Governor Murphy of New Jersey, is a Democrat, and he's basically saying, you know, we don't have any information. And Republican lawmakers are saying, you're in charge. You should have information. All these people are coming to me saying I should have information because I'm a mayor of my local city, and I don't have any information, and basically saying the exact same thing and passing it up a step to them. And as long as there's a Democrat in the way, it's going to be their fault somehow. You know, eventually this is going to be Biden's fault or Harris. I don't know which. But you guys have any theories as to what this is? Because it seems like anybody's guess at this point as to what these drones are is a valid one. Kyle, you first. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to add that those political representatives are only as good as the independent bodies and investigators and citizens advocates. You know, the individual people doing out there in the world that want to get a message out or draw attention to an issue that is you know maybe not getting enough, or we're not as active, proactive enough, and these individuals know about it. So I think that's taken time. They're always, you know, going to voice something after someone has had an experience that compelled them to use their political power, right?
Go ahead, Alex.
I mean, this story reminds me a bit of, I think it was last year. Was it the year before? I can't even remember anymore. When we were last talking about Chinese spy balloons flying over the United States.
Yeah, they keep bringing that up, the spy balloon. Let's not make this another spy balloon. Like, that was some major scandal. When, in fact, they did the right thing by shooting it down over an ocean, not over a city. You know, it's common sense, but still, that's something that, you know, Democrats' fault, and they're not going to defend themselves.
For novel phenomena, though, like, we maybe haven't all established how we would handle that, and there was a lot of different opinions on what to do. And I think because it was a new thing, maybe everyone didn't quite evaluate it.
I mean, what boggles my mind about this, though, is that nobody's been able to figure out who's behind this. And I think you do have to start thinking that maybe this is some sort of malicious activity. The reports that I've read about this particular matter indicated that these drones were also flying over critical infrastructure, things like reservoirs, electronic transmission lines, rail stations, police departments, military.
On, Alex, hold on. What you just listed here, it's impossible to avoid. You know, it's all those things are everywhere.
True. Yeah, there's cops everywhere. That's right. Police departments, you know, the military bases, not necessarily everywhere, but yeah, sure. I mean, they're critical infrastructure because they're infrastructure. And infrastructure means it's kind of all around, right? But I think you cannot rule out at the moment that this might be some kind of foreign power performing some kind of reconnaissance, or at least just deciding to put people on edge. Why would choose the population of New Jersey to terrorize with these particular types of drones by just flying them over? That remains to be seen.
Well, the other thing, too, is, like, why not follow them? I mean, if we're willing to go and figure out where murder hornets nest, you know, like, shouldn't we be worried a little bit about, like, 6-foot objects that seem to disappear?
Well, the other thing, too, is, I mean, somebody's got to be controlling these drones. They're not entirely on autopilot all of the time, so they must have some kind of electronic transmission that goes back to, presumably, a controller somewhere. So I'm wondering if maybe, perhaps even some of our listeners have seen or heard any of these things, and maybe they've whipped out like a frequency counter and determined whether or not there were certain curious frequencies abounding in the area at that moment.
You know, the odds aren't tiny that it could be one of our listeners doing this. We have very smart people and very, shall I say, mischievous people that listen to us.
Actually, have you seen the drone?
Our drones? I didn't mean to pluralize that. No, we only have one small drone that's currently...
You know what? I think I know where it is.
No. But here's the thing. You know, a drone can be controlled, but it doesn't always have to be controlled by somebody with a remote control unit standing underneath it. It can be controlled through other radio signals, and somebody could be in a completely different part of the world. I'm not pointing the finger and saying, oh yeah, it's definitely China, or it's some country that we want to blame for everything that's going on. It could literally be anybody. Hey, maybe it's even not of this planet, just to get another conspiracy started.
Yeah, and I think the size, that like form factor, if you will, it may have it relies on a certain amount of power, right? And it could be incredibly light and carrying a lot of whatever kind of energy source. So, I mean, it's not on the scale of, like, something people would just use in their backyard or something. So maybe it could go for a, like, much longer range, depending on what kind of fuel.
Go ahead, Rob.
And the interesting thing about these drones is they're apparently larger than the ones typically used by hobbyists. And I don't have experience playing with these sort of things, but I'm very curious as to whether maybe they would be large enough to not need constant radio communication with something on the ground. Could they be, independent for at least a little bit of their flight?
Well, I mean, they seem to go over the same flight path, if you will.
It's like a patrol.
Yeah, almost like it's just making its rounds every day. And if you know that much, I've heard people say, yeah, it's appearing in the same place. Well, then if you know where it's going to appear, can't there be that can get a good look at it and maybe follow it, see where it lands or where it goes? It just seems like, this has been going on for, what, a month now? We're better than that. We can figure out where, we can find a guy in a random McDonald's in Altoona. We can do this, I think. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I think this is a bit of a mystery here. I think there's got to be some sort of reasonable explanation of all of this. It might be some kind of hobbyist group or something. I don't know.
Hang on. Name one reasonable answer
to
this.
What hobby is this?
Yeah, this is in the news everywhere, so no hobbyist is going to continue doing it. So what possible reasonable explanation can there be?
Yeah.
I honestly can't think of, is it our military doing this and not telling us and pretending they don't know?
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that one hand didn't know what the other was doing. But I think despite all the media reports, if the military continued to do this, that would be totally ridiculous. I think there's got to be very easy ways to capture these things as well. I mean, one thing that makes me think, somebody's doing this is either like a prank or there perhaps could be a malicious purpose behind it, would be that a lot of these are flying at night or they're almost exclusively night flights. You see, so that makes it more difficult for them to be detected. They turn off their lights. They're trying to evade some kind of detection. But I think that a reasonable helicopter pilot with a net or the ability to shoot one of these things down and then take it apart shouldn't be too difficult. If they're all over the place and they're being spotted, why can't we get up there and take it out?
There's a lot of different reasons. Like, it's more complex than it looks. Like, think about it. If they're over, like, a whole bunch of people, like, the whole, like, Part 107 and whatever, like, recreational drone pilot thing, it's all about, like, okay, we're going to let you fly this over people, but you got to be really careful, and you got to be in range, you got to be... There's all these rules.
Well, Alex said the helicopter would have a net.
Yeah, I mean, at night, doing, like, maybe throwing nets at night, again, the complexity of, like, all this. I think, like, your idea of a hobbyist group going after them probably... you know, gamifying it in that way actually might yield more results if people were just as curious. I think obliterating it mid-flight, also you could run the risk over certain areas of creating debris, and you might not get recoverable pieces that could tell you much more that you would want to know, or, you know, that kind of thing. That there's all sorts of layers to this. Also, there's been discussion about who actually has permission to, quote, engage. And then they're also employing certain countermeasures. So assuming some municipality gets permission to do something other than fly their own drone, which itself has been avoided in some cases, trying to shoot at it, it might try to avoid that. So then you've got random fire in the air over wherever it is. Yeah. It just seems like there's a lot of aspects of it because it's in the air. And it's lower in observability, potentially, because it's not of the size that typical radar would track things. So there's a lot of complexities.
I'm not in favor of shooting it down. I'm in favor of learning and following it and just getting as much information with the technology that we have. But, Kyle, I wanted to ask you, because you know a thing or two about this. Drones are required to have...
Yes.
I didn't finish the sentence yet. Drones are required to have an ID or a signal being transmitted. How does that work? What are the requirements?
Well, there's a lot about it. I think it's called remote ID. But basically, instead of announcing a flight in an area that might otherwise have traffic, that's not like a designated recreational area for flying, you have to identify yourself electronically. And a lot of the drones come with those identifiers, and you would maybe link it to your Part 107 drone pilot's license. And that way, your particular vehicle and whatever class it is, and for whatever purpose you're using it, maybe you're doing commercial videography or something, or real estate stuff, something like that. So you use this in your everyday life, you know, that equipment would be identifiable, and a lot of the newer ones, I guess, can transmit it on their own. If you have older equipment or you're a hobbyist and you build your own, you have to supplement that, and there are different vendors that are selling small little modules that can transmit, and I got a couple of those, and I was playing around with them, and it's really interesting. If you work with some of the other microcontrollers and stuff, you can kind of build onto things in ways and that, you know, a lot of people have been doing for years. So I had to do it to be, I guess, in compliance.
And what is the distance these things transmit their IDs?
I think it's 3 kilometers. I'm not sure.
3 kilometers. Okay, so I mean, I haven't heard it said. Obviously, if it was transmitting some kind of ID, people would know what it was. But is anybody getting close enough to get that information? But I'm going to assume it's not there, which makes it illegal right away. Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you and say the smartest and probably most practical move is to somehow follow these things. And, you know, if we there might be something fascinating at the end of it. You know, it might follow them, and there's a big drone nest with some little baby drones that they're bringing food back to. I mean, who knows?
And I'm going to turn it over to Alex now. Go ahead, Alex.
I'm looking at some video online of these drones that people have posted. And I have to say, I would invite our listeners to research this and look it up. It's fairly terrifying to see this. It really is. I mean, there are veritable constellations of these drones if you look at some of the time-lapse footage of the skies. And it seems very much like these are not at all the kind of hobbyist drones that you would... They look like they're about the size of an SUV, just flying around.
You want terrifying, Alex. Have them start firing on you. That's terrifying. We don't know that. We don't know that yet.
But that's what's in the back of people's minds mm-hmm. here, is that they've been watching the war unfold in Ukraine. They know how deadly these Russian drone attacks have been, and all of a sudden they start flying over New Jersey. They are slightly terrifying. Having seen this now, it looks like it's very clear to me that whoever's doing this is trying to scare the people over which you're flying. You're doing this at night with no notice, no warning to local government officials, municipalities, the federal government. Whoever's doing this, I think, is doing it for some kind of nefarious purpose, and very much seems that way.
Well, assuming it isn't some agency that's not telling other agencies what it's up to, yeah, I think you're probably right about that. And also, It speaks to resources because these drones are not cheap. Drones that size cannot be, and they can fly for a pretty long time, but there are a lot of them. There's like a fleet of them. And that's why I find it so hard to believe that nobody has been able to follow where they go or predict where they're going to be. So, it's a puzzle up there in the sky, but it doesn't seem like that much of a puzzle that can't be solved with a little technology. Yes, Alex.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I also want to say, I think Rob is right in his comment before that these things probably operate through some kind of way more sophisticated means than an ordinary drone would. So looking out and trying to detect what radio frequencies would be in the area, I think would probably be futile. I've also seen maps of where they've flown over now as well, and it's 10 counties in New Jersey. But what's weird is it's all New Jersey.
No, it's not. We just said Philadelphia and Staten Island before that. Yeah.
Sorry, I missed that. Yeah, so it did go down to Philadelphia. Okay, so but at least 10 counties in New Jersey itself, and New Jersey counties are not small counties. This is a pretty much like the entire north from east to west across New Jersey has been flown over by these drones. So this is some kind of massive reconnaissance type of activity.
So the question to ask is, what is so interesting in New Jersey?
Well, there's Trump golf courses over there. That's something.
Okay, first of all, he only has one golf course there, as far as I know. And, you know, he doesn't hit the ball out of range that much that they have to explore surrounding counties.
Not with drones, yes.
But maybe it is messing with him. I mean, you know, that's a positive spin on it, I think.
Yeah, maybe. possibly it's him. There's some military bases over there, but there's really not much going on, I think, in this part of the state. The other thing is, if the intention was to terrify a population, wouldn't it have been so much scarier to do this over Manhattan, to do this over New York? I mean, it's right around the corner. If you really want to scare the hell out of people, have a constellation of untrackable drones flying over Manhattan.
Alex, you live in Manhattan.
I do.
You know that the people of Manhattan tend to be unfazed by many things. In New Jersey and other places, they're kind of looking for things to fall out of the sky. But New York, it's like, I got to get to a meeting, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Unless it really, you know, hits the fan, the proverbial you know what. Now, and there's another explanation of this, too, is if you think about why didn't they choose a target that would have been more interesting to terrorize with this constellation of drones. The intention of flying these over New Jersey and not New York may actually have been to gauge the response of the local authorities and to determine what they would do to try to track and trace and detect and deter these types of drones. So that perhaps when they use it for an actual attack at some point, 6 months or longer or shorter down the road, they know what to expect.
So you think it could just be a big drill?
I think it could be a big drill designed to draw out a response.
Oh, it'll get a response.
It's an interesting hypothetical. I think that we could step back a little bit, though, and just think maybe that, well, I think the way that it's presenting is perhaps terrorizing some. It's a curiosity to others. The reaction to it, like what is occurring, I don't know if they're menacing. Right, it's curious, and people's reaction, like mystery payloads and stuff. We're already getting that with satellite stories about satellites, but the busyness of them, that whole like nature of being on a patrol, and as Rob pointed out, potentially them not relaying any kind of information, or I don't know if it was talked about, but like no kind of transmissions, meaning it's on sort of an automated flight plan. Means that whatever, if it's collecting something versus just being sort of a menace in the sky or something that's curious, would have to get back somewhere if it's not actually something that's being sent in real time. So it depends. I think it's, you know, how you respond is dependent on what information you have and filtering like our response to the thing, the curiosity is, versus just the occurring, like what are the facts of it, and deducting how to interpret, learning more in light of just that without being terrorized, because it is scary, but it also you know, we can't overblow it either.
Now, it's New Jersey, not Kentucky, so I wonder, you know, what are the odds of somebody taking matters into their own hands and just shooting it out of the sky? Is it too high to be reached by conventional weaponry that civilians might have?
I don't think so. It's really funny you mentioned that, Emmanuel. I was going to make that same exact comment. And New Jersey, you know, is a state that I believe in certain counties has, you know, pretty liberal gun laws. And by liberal, I mean that you can have a gun pretty freely. It's certainly nowhere near as restrictive as New York. And I don't think it's as open as Pennsylvania. But I'm really surprised that nobody has taken out a rifle and taking one of these things down. I mean, I think they do seem to be flying low enough for people to get some decent photographs of them at night.
I hear that is effective.
Yeah, I think it's hard to shoot a moving target like that in the air that's so far away with a rifle. You're not talking about – this is way out of the reach of a shotgun. Yeah, we're not talking about trap or skeet or something like that here. But you would have to use a rifle, a very high-powered rifle, to hit these things.
Okay, I want to move on to... go ahead.
I don't have anything. Did you have something, Rob?
We should probably point out that we're not advocating shooting rifles or shooting guns into the sky randomly in hopes of trapping yourself a drone.
Absolutely. All right, if you know where the drones are coming from, you can write to us, oth@2600.com. Next week, you can call us on the radio, or this week, you can call us on the internet at 8 o'clock on YouTube. But let's move on to some other stories. You guys heard about Google's breakthrough Willow quantum processor. Yeah, this is it's straight out of science fiction here. Basically, it's reignited debates about crypto security. Some observers are suggesting that quantum computers could break Bitcoin's encryption. The tech giant claims its new quantum computing chip can complete certain calculations in 5 minutes, which would take traditional supercomputers an impractical amount of time to process. I have that impractical amount of time to process on a different piece of paper here. It's 10 septillion years. That's 10 to the 25th. I think if you have comma 000, you have 8 of those before you have the 10. That's how many years it would take. And that number, by the way, vastly exceeds the age of the universe. So Google claims that they were able to solve a problem that would have taken 10 septillion years in 5 minutes. Yeah, you have a dubious look on your face, Kyle, and I have to say I kind of agree with that because... that doesn't seem possible, but they're claiming they did it. Now, you know, there are still many, many factors that need to be worked out. They use quantum computing. It's a new type of computing. It uses the properties of quantum physics, where small particles can exist in multiple states at once and affect each other instantly across distances to solve certain problems way faster than regular computers. And unlike traditional computers that work with bits that are either 0 or 1, quantum computers use quantum bits, or known as qubits, that can be both 0 and 1 at the same time, allowing them to process huge amounts of possibilities simultaneously. The only problem that I've heard several times is that it's not necessarily accurate, and that's a big deal. It might be able to solve the problem, but is it really solving the problem or just finishing the problem? Still, it's a breakthrough, and... you know, thinking that it could potentially crack Bitcoin along with all kinds of other things. As this article in Discover Scene concludes, still technically years away, a quantum computer powerful enough to hack the Bitcoin network would be the least of anyone's worries. If the most powerful computing network in the world could be compromised, just about any system on the planet could face the same threat. So, you know, we're looking at a potential future here where there is no real security, encryption-wise.
Thanks, Google.
Well, yeah, thanks a lot. I'm sure they'll have something to sell to us, though, that will protect us against them. Any thoughts on this, guys? Rob?
Yeah, exactly. The something that could break the encryption in Bitcoin and things on that level would also mean that pretty much any encryption that we're using at all in any aspect of our lives is also broken. And that would be terrible, but it still kind of warms my heart to know that cryptocurrency might be broken.
Alex, I'm sure you have something to say to that.
Well, yeah, I think people have been thinking and planning around how to live in a post-quantum computing world for some time. What I just don't understand, though, is if we're talking about math here, right, and asymmetric cryptography is generally based off of mathematical principles that make it very difficult to factor extraordinarily large prime numbers. And here we're talking about doing math in parallel as opposed to in serial, and when it comes to different equations, because that's what quantum computing and qubits do. You have that zero and one in different states. So with the numbers that we're using right now that need to be factored, it would, you know, it becomes trivial for quantum computing to do that. So why can't we just use larger numbers, like numbers that are so much bigger? Because the last I heard, there was an infinite amount of numbers. We're not going to run out of them. So why can't we just use bigger numbers?
Because there's not enough addressing space.
That's probably true too, right? There's no addressing space in memory for it or something, right? So it becomes actually, I guess, a programming and a hardware issue in some respects. So that makes sense to me. But I always thought that, I mean, maybe a cryptographer who knows more about this than me could explain that to me. But I wonder about that. There's I think any kind of asymmetric encryption, though, like RSA, is going to be really threatened by these types of advancements. What's also kind of fascinating to think about in terms of data breaches and companies that have been subject to ransomware vulnerabilities, a lot of the times when a company is breached, data is harvested, data is stolen, it's exfiltrated, it's taken back, and you would ordinarily think that data that was stolen, well, the only stuff that matters, the only stuff you had to report based on the laws as they're written right now are data that wasn't encrypted. That's what the subject of data breaches is generally, that generally is, right? It's data that isn't encrypted. It goes out into the public domain. And you don't have to report data that isn't encrypted because you're operating under the assumption that the encryption and that is going to be uncrackable. But now all of that data that was stolen from so many years here, let's say if this quantum computing technology becomes available, all of that data will become viewable. That encryption will become trivial to crack in a post-quantum computing world because it's probably encrypted with, asymmetric encryption, just like, you know, RSA. So I also think that bad guys, threat actors, will have to be thinking about this now and taking not just unencrypted data, but encrypted data. And that could become more and more interesting to see this unfold.
So is that the first task of, like, the quantum computing era is quantum cryptography, to make everything safe when that ability to compute is achieved?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what everybody is hoping, right? That there will be some way to ensure that cryptography remains secure. But I don't know the means by which that would be done at the moment. I'd be really interested to learn more.
Well, like, if we're all using devices that are capable of that, then I guess we're all able to use a level of cryptography that matches the state of innovation that can break traditional cryptography. But therein, you know, you'd have to restore everything onto this new level of security that quantum computers would enable, and we're still very far away from, like, commercial application and where everybody can do that.
Yeah, I do remember seeing some research too. I know that NIST was also looking into algorithms and systems that could be certified to work in a post-quantum computing world. I don't remember exactly where they got to on this, but I know that the National Institute of Science and Technology was taking an active interest in this as well.
Okay, moving on. Yeah, that's quite a story to think about for a while, though.
Good story.
Yeah, it is. It's scary. So we have all these breaches, including one that involved the pick for FBI director, Kash Patel. Apparently this has got Republicans up in a tizzy as well. Senator Tom Tillis, Republican of North Carolina, he is looking for answers from the FBI after Trump's pick to lead the bureau was reportedly targeted by Iranian hackers. He says for an Iranian-backed group to have targeted the potential next director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation is extremely alarming. Also alarming is the speed at which sensitive and potentially classified information about this attack spread to the news media. So, he's kind of bent out of shape because people found out that Kash Patel was vulnerable and that he was able to be hacked and that his data was not secure. Basically, I guess the solution in his eyes is that this be hushed up and that that we don't actually talk about it at all. As you know, it's imperative that the FBI and other intelligence agencies maintain confidentiality to ensure the American people are safe from enemies at home and abroad. The release of this information raises major national security and personal safety concerns. I maintain that the compromising of data is what raises concerns, and that you don't alleviate those concerns by not talking about it, by not revealing it, by not confronting it. And what's going on here is that Republicans are trying to blame the FBI for the information getting out and pretty much putting them on the same level as the people who got the information in the first place, which, you know, kind of tracks with what they're trying to do by overhauling and demolishing the agency by putting somebody like Kash Patel in charge in the first place. And, of course, this is leading to more support for him, regardless of the fact that his data was compromised. And basically a lot of suspicion and hostility towards those people that Trump has been telling us to be suspicious of. And it just makes you wonder, how many other things should we not be told about that we already know about? You know, how many other data compromises that go on every single day will be hushed up with this kind of mentality? Alex?
I mean, I think far from this reporting deserving to be hushed up or somehow brushed aside here, I want to go back to what we were arguing about last week, which is that, you know, we think that this should be further reported on, that not only did the media have an obligation to report on this, but I think the federal officials themselves have an obligation to be transparent with the public about the nature of this particular type of attack. I mean, this is a guy who's going to run the FBI and be in charge of the nation's counterintelligence efforts, and he gets fished, essentially. I want to know how this happened. Mm-hmm. I want to know the details of the vulnerability. And I think the American people and Congress in particular should be able to assess whether this is somebody who's fit to guard the nation's secrets.
Yeah, and secrets seem to be what these guys are trying to push more than anything. You know, you're not going to get Gates's record of the crimes he committed. That's being hushed up. They want to hush up what's going on with Patel, with his insecurity as far as compromising information. Who knows how many other things pressure will be put on to not reveal to the people when we have every single right to know. Here's another story that I guess we're not supposed to know about. The People's Republic of China has been relentless in its cyber attacks, trade manipulation, and war threats against the U.S., yet many Americans still hesitate to recognize China as the enemy it truly is. While the majority of Americans hold a negative opinion of China, only 40% identify it as an enemy. This perspective needs to change. What I'm reading here is I don't have the credit. I'm sorry. Our toner is running low, so I can't even read where this is from, but I'm sorry. But basically, this is an opinion piece that is trying to outline that that the Chinese are the actual threat here. But if you, regardless of whether or not that's right or wrong, if you don't talk about it, if you don't reveal that, hey, they got into the phone companies a few weeks ago, worst hack in American history, then, you know, you won't be aware of the threats. You won't be aware of how to protect yourself. And more misinformation will be spread around so that you'll just assume everybody is up to something with absolutely no evidence whatsoever. I don't know. It's something that we really have to do better on. Any thoughts on that? No? Nothing? Okay, we're all completely silent.
Agree with you there.
Is it the Chinese regime we're afraid of? What's
Dang.
Guys, seriously, they can't hurt you from here.
Yeah, I was having a little issue with the audio there too. No, but I did agree with you on this. I think this is just a particularly. I don't think there's anything contentious about what you're saying there. I think it's the whole thing is crazy.
Okay, I guess that's the extent of the analysis we'll have here tonight. Here's a letter from one of our listeners, from Charles. Just an observation. Seems like you do a lot of victim blaming when individuals or organizations that don't align with your political beliefs get hacked. However, shame on the hackers if they attack the Internet Archive. Interesting perspective. You think we do that? I guess, if people are stupid as far as the security precautions they take, or if they don't take security precautions at all, or if they try to blame the media or the FBI or anybody else but themselves for their security problems, we'll have some fun with that. I don't know if that's victim blaming or just blaming stupid people that are in charge of a lot more than they obviously have the ability to be in charge of. I think we also we try to look at the kinds of hacks that send a message to see if those messages are positive or negative. And when you take down something like the Internet Archive, it's hard to see the positive in that. And there's no political slant to the Internet Archive. They're an archive. They archive what the Internet is. That's not political. So regardless of where they are coming from, we would see that as a bad thing because, just like if you take down a fire department or, you take down an electrical grid, there's really no humor in that. There's nothing to make fun of. But if somebody says, if a governor goes on TV and says that he wants to arrest a reporter because he reveals some source code from a web page, we're going to have fun with that. We're going to make fun of that person because they're an idiot and they deserve to be made fun of. I'm sorry if it just somehow aligns that those are the people that don't share our political beliefs. It's hard to imagine sharing political beliefs or beliefs of any sort with people who can't comprehend the basics of security and how to not give everything away to anybody with the most modest of technical skills. But I think we're pretty consistent. I don't know. Rob, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think in the case of the Internet Archive, the person who was attacking the Internet Archive was not doing it to send a message, was not doing it to be clever. I think that person just came out and said, I did this because I want to. And, that's not creative. There's no heart and soul behind that, as there is behind the best hacks, I think, that we report on and talk about. The most meaningful ones. There was just no meaning to it. And the Internet Archive is not like a big corporate news site or, store or something that really isn't hurt by, a couple of days offline or whatever. The Internet Archive is a public resource. It is a creation of the hacker community, I think it would be safe to say. Tons of hackers work there. Tons of hackers contribute to it, use stuff from it, and depend on it for many things. And so I think for, a hacker reaction to those particular takedowns, I don't think we were being very hypocritical or anything like that about it.
Go ahead, Alex. Alex, please.
I think we do. I tend to agree with the caller, the writer here, the emailer, and that I think he's right. I think we do blame the victim. I think I've called us out for this a bit as well in the past. But, you know, having been the CISO of the NFL and a current CISO, I do have to tell you, I mean, cybersecurity is really hard. It's tough. It's complicated. And I think has as much import as something like a Byzantine mosaic. You know, it's really hard to defend against a large attack surface area of any kind of large company, especially something that has multiple footprints around the world. And cybersecurity is, again, you know, like a Byzantine mosaic, very much a patchwork of systems, of people, of policies. Everything has to be going right all the time in order for you to be secure. So I think he's right to call us out on doing a little bit too much of blaming the victim sometimes.
Well, when did we ever blame the NFL?
Not the NFL. We weren't talking about them. Although, you know,
who have we blamed just for having a security breach? You know, like I said, it's when people double down or try to, you know, they say something incredibly stupid or racist, and then they say their Twitter account got hacked when it's obvious that it didn't, or, you know, basically trying to, you know, claim that a hack didn't happen when it did. A company doesn't let its customers know that their data has been breached, and they're the ones that wind up paying the price, and maybe they get free credit reporting for a year. You know, that's the kind of thing we make fun of, and I don't apologize for that at all.
Well, I think, you know, don't forget, we were just lampooning Kash Patel for being fished.
Yeah, he's an idiot. I'm sorry. The guy wants to dismantle the FBI, and they're putting him in charge of the FBI. He's you know, I could go on for the rest of the hour about this. I don't think you need me to. Tune to MSNBC or, you know, any other news outlet, and you'll find out for yourself. But yeah, you know, it makes sense that he was the weak link here.
Okay, I know. All right, perhaps, yeah. But I mean, I think that's a little bit of a victim blaming. I mean, no, he's the victim of.
We're all going to be the victim if he gets nominated, or confirmed. I swear to God. But no, I don't think we should hold back on that kind of a thing. If somebody, you know, obviously there was a breach here, based on somebody with no knowledge of security, and you're going to put that person in charge of the FBI, it really bothers a lot of people.
Well, look, I tend to agree. I think there's a distinction. I think most of the time we focus on companies that I would say would have been grossly negligent as opposed to just negligent. Like negligence, let's just say that's like the universal standard. But for those that are grossly negligent, you know, those are the ones that we tend to focus on. But even still, I see the emailer's point, the writer's point here.
Well, I'm not denying he doesn't have a point, but it's I don't know. I think we try to be fair about this. And if somebody we like does something stupid, we'll call them out for that as well. We have in the past. You know, I'll come up with some examples. I'll track it down because I know I've gotten people mad that are friends because, you know, we call it as we see it. And unfortunately, the people we don't like tend to make more mistakes than the people we do like.
Well, think about what happened 24 years ago with your lawsuit with the Motion Picture Association of America. That was basically calling out stupidity. And yeah, so that's been a long time hobby around.
Except we lost.
Yeah, it did. Or
are they calling us out and we're the stupid ones? I'm not really sure.
Well, it was really to make a point, I think. You know, I think, you know, we can talk further about this, I hope, on overtime.
Yeah, we can if we really want to. Anyway, I guess now's a good time to give out the email address as we're pretty much out of time here. OTH@2600.com. That is how you can send letters of your own to us. Or if you know anything about the drones flying over New Jersey, maybe they're flying over New Jersey right now. In fact, they probably should be, even in the heavy wind and rain. That'll be interesting to see. Let's try and get information that the mass media is not reporting, because we as hackers can figure out things and learn about the technical abilities and uniqueness of things like this and share them and figure things out. Again, next week, we will be taking phone calls on this radio show for the first time in a number of years. Well, we have the technology to do that now. We will be taking phone calls tonight on Overtime, and you can find Overtime by going to YouTube and going to channel 2600, and you'll find us there. Overtime starts at around 8 o'clock, actually pretty much exactly at 8 o'clock. Any closing thoughts?
No.
Okay, no closing thoughts from Kyle, Alex, Rob, Bila?
No, I'm good. I look forward to seeing everybody join us on YouTube.
All right. We will see you there. We'll see you back here next week. Please stay tuned to WBAI. Please support WBAI. Buddy.wbai.org is the website. You can pledge a monthly amount, which adds up to a bigger amount for us over an entire year. And that's what keeps us on the air and keeps lively discussions like this going on many, many fronts. Just listen for several days if you've never heard this radio station before. It really is one of the crown jewels of New York City. All right, we will see you next week. Have a good night. Bye.